welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 79. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Yo!
In the background, you may hear some Mickey Mouse and my three-year-old son, Noah. Noah, say hi.
Hi.
Good boy.
Nice.
He's going to be chilling in the background, so, of course...
Family-oriented podcast, know. That's what this is.
I will be... If I will be using, like, supplement swear words like fudge and dagnabbit, now you know why. Although I did tell a lady in the store the other day to fuck off in front of my kids, so...
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
She was a bitch. She's telling me how to raise my children, so I told her to fuck off, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was warranted.
Let me talk to her.
I'm sure you would have had more to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you see someone yelling at their kids, the kids fucking deserved it. I mean, sorry, fudging deserved it. And so just keep on walking.
Well, I mean... Not necessarily. I mean, but I think you can walk around and you can see a parent what they're doing, and you can assess the situation,
right?
Whether they're being dickheads or not, if you're a good parent
yourself. Yes.
Because there's plenty of times when I walk by and I'm like, good for that adult. They're like taking the initiative and telling their kid to sit the fuck down, or you know they're gonna get in trouble. And other kids just roam around the aisles and stuff like that, throwing shit in the store.
Exactly.
Parents are just walking around where they are. And then they start screaming at them higher and higher, and they're not listening. Well, of course, because they don't listen to you to begin with. So, yeah, it's – but anyways, unless it is being abuse, I don't think anybody should ever interfere, because you have your own – you know, parenting methods.
Well, like, if I had the kids,
some are better, some are not, but if it's torturing
or beating my children, by all means, call the cops and step in.
Stop me. Please stop me.
But
if I have to do it, stop me.
Yelling at my kids, who are acting like insane animals, keep on walking. Cause I'll move to you next, motherfucker. All right. Brad, you are going to be running down your experience at Fantastic Fest. So
yeah,
we will do that.
Yeah, I'm going to give the whole for people that don't know, because a lot of things is a lot of people just probably hear about Fantastic Fest and it's like, oh, it's about movies. But I kind of want to give the overall experience for people, because too many websites and too many critics just focus on the films, which is a big portion of what's there, but it's a whole experience in itself, so
nice.
I would like to go over all that.
Cool. Before we do that, let's jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow, I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
I'll go quick. Wait, who's going first?
I don't care. You can go. Go by all means, good sir.
I'm gonna do mine real quick, because I'm just doing all horror films. So this month, so that's what I'm watching. First up, I watched A Christmas Horror Story, which is ambitious. I give it credit for that. It's an anthology, of course, and it intertwines with stories, and it tries to do the whole Krampus thing, but just doesn't achieve it fully, I feel. Most of the stories, I think, fall pretty short of what they're trying to achieve or be scary. Just kind of overall let down. It's very dry. The oddest thing about it is I really do not like William Shatner. I don't like anything he's in. I don't think he's funny. I'm not a Star Trek person, but this whole, like, William Shatner being a comedian now, just don't find it funny. But he's a fucking riot in this movie. Like, I could literally watch an hour and a half of him being this talk show host, because
he's
so fucking good. And it's very, like, he just, like, he gets into that flow, and he's super funny. That was that. It's cheap on Vudu. You can rent it. I think it comes out on Blu-ray soon. The other film that I rewatched, because I saw a rough cut of this a while ago, but I rewatched Lost After Dark, hoping that it would do something different and It's one of those 80s throwbacks that just wants to be an 80s throwback for no particular reason. It's like, hey, I want to do a slasher. Oh, well, you know, that's kind of overplayed now. Let's not do that. Well, let me do it as a throwback. Cool. And it's kind of exactly how the movie is. It almost, you, hey, Noah, you try to get like past like this corniness of the script and bad acting. You know,
is like a really bad beard in that too? Is that the one I'm thinking of, or am I thinking of something else?
Well, the main killer has kind of a beard. It looks weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that could be it. but overall, the movie's just like, it feels like, not to criticize or, you know, really poke fun at filmmakers, but it seems that sometimes if you don't have the budget, the script or the actors, might as well call your movie a throwback and kind of get away with it. And that's what this feels like. I don't mean that in a really negative way, because the movie's not bad. It's just very, very generic and bland. You know, it, like, if you want to throw it in with the other, you know, 50 throwback slashers that came out this year, it just follows suit with those and doesn't stand out. So anyways, that's Lost After Dark. I got it around to, I haven't watched Bordello of Blood, but I got Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, which I was super excited about because at many, many times in the past year or two, I've been wanting to purchase, Demon Knight from different countries. It's been out on Blu-ray, but I held out because I was like, you know, it's Universal, you know, Scream Factory obviously has a deal with them. You know, this is going to come out eventually. So it did. I was super excited about it. It's one of my favorite horror films growing up. It was one of those that I went to the theater and I saw it with my mom. And then, you know, I bought the tape when it came out and I just rewatched it, masturbated to it because, you know, there's a lot of boobies in it. And, you know, it's just a really, really fun, like, you know, survival horror film with a hell of a cast. I mean, William Sadler is so badass in this. Billy Zane is fucking, like, it's amazing that Billy Zane was only, like, amazing in this movie. Like, everything else, Billy Zane is just falls really flat. But Billy Zane is fucking hysterical in this flick. And he carries himself in such kind of a psychotic but hillbilly way. And it feels so right. You know, like, everything comes together because of him. You know, he like steals the show for most of the film. And it's unbelievable that Billy Zane, because obviously it's there, but I guess he's never had the opportunity to like to do more stuff like this or really express himself or use his abilities.
I feel like he's only been cast to really do like kind of the pretty boy dick douchebag. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really think Billy Zane has some talent behind him. It's just he never really gets to, you know, never really gets to show it. Jada Pinkett Smith, who's not that great of an actress, I think, but she, you know, does a decent job in this. Directed by Ernest Dickerson, who's obviously kind of and this is almost like borderline blaxploitation horror as well, being, you know, where Ernest Dickerson's coming from and kind of how the lead is Jada Pinkett Smith. Has a couple like urban things to it, which I have always enjoyed. I noticed that later on growing up. But it has, of course, Dick Miller, who is, you know, always steals a show, always has his screen time. And it's always a pleasure to see him. Thomas Hayden Church, who is one of my personally favorite actors. And he plays the character Roach, who's just kind of a scumbag. And of course, Thomas Hayden Church can play anything. CCH Pounder. I don't know if you say Ch Pounder or if it's CCH Pounder, but you'll recognize the name, but you'll definitely recognize the woman. She's just this, I don't know. She always plays the authority figure in movies and she's extremely intimidating. I don't know. It's another woman I'm surprised who hasn't had more roles in her life. Yeah. She's very recognizable.
Yeah. She's been on everything.
You know, Yeah, and it's always she's so assertive in her movies, whether mm-hmm. what role she has, and always surprised that she never got – like she always does minor things. She never had like a leading role, right. And I think she could carry a movie by herself very, very easily. And then, of course, Brenda Bach is in it. She plays Cordelia, which she's always been adorable ever since she's been in horror films since she was younger. I just went through the cast of Demonite, apparently. but this is the special effects are decent. I listened to some of the commentary, some of the new kind of the behind the scenes stuff, you know, the interviews and everything like that, just because I felt that the transfer was very subpar. It definitely changes around the hour mark. Because it's very DVD-ish when it starts. Like, the grain is just a little too much. The blacks are off. And it's a very dark film.
Could it just be did they remaster this, or is it just – did they get it?
I'm pretty sure this is an old HD master.
HD master.
Yeah. It doesn't say anything about a new transfer, okay. Which it's Screen Factory, so I don't expect it to. but – The special features are good, so that makes up for it, but it's just kind of a depressing thing for Demon Knight not having kind of a new transfer or something new, because it's Universal owns it, so obviously the print's there. You know, Universal has always owned this film. It's Tales from the Crypt. You know, you would think that, you know, you would get Donner and Walter and Hill all together. What? I said Walter and Hill. You get Hill, all those guys together, and they could have put a better package together, right. I think, for this, for visual. Audio is decent. It's definitely remixed in 5.1. It's loud. Very loud movie, so you can hear everything. It's very bombastic. However, just the transfers is really, like, very upsetting. Hmm. But I said it does change around the hour mark. You notice this whole new groove with it where it looks crisp and clean and all the blacks match up. There's hardly any grain. And it's literally about the 55 minute mark. Like, it's that noticeable.
Hmm.
So that was a little different for me. But anyways, definitely a decent package. I know that people are still going to pick it up because, of course, it's fucking Demon Knight. Another Screen Factory title. This is one of their new, one of their newer films, because they obviously release their acquisitioning newer films. This one's called Gravy. Right, it's got Michael Weston.
This week.
Oh, it just came out this week.
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Weston's in it. If you look him up, you'll definitely know who he is. I've always enjoyed him. He plays in this really cool movie, like around 2001, called Wishcraft, that I really like. But it's kind of a unique plot. It's just these three people go in on Halloween night to this Mexican restaurant, and they're like, hey, we're going to eat everybody in here. So it's a comedy for sure, but it's just three cannibals that hold people hostage and eat them through the night. Sarah Silverman's in it, which, you know, she always brightens my day. She's up there on my list. But anyways, it is kind of a fun contemporary film. It has its moments. The soundtrack's really great. The songs that they pick to play, I guess it's from the people that do the show Psych.
Right,
so I think
yeah.
There's some kind of following from that. But if it's cheap, I pick it up. It's funny. It has moments for sure.
Yeah. It's on my radar once it kind of gets below $10.
One of my favorite films of last year has finally come out on Blu-ray. It's called Alleluia. It is a French film. It's based off the same story The Honeymoon Killers is based off of. Just this guy who goes around picking up women and then tossing them to the side. That's what he does in his daily life. Hmm. But he does it to a woman that truly falls madly in love with him. And she is like, you know, fuck this. I understand what you're trying to do, but let's do it together. Let's fuck over more people. You know, so they work together now in order to do this. But it is sexy, it is gross, it is grimy, It is full of murder and sex and more sex. And it has the guy that plays Laurent Lucas. He plays the main character, and he is so fucking good. Like, I can't wait for this guy to be in more things. He was actually one of the Fantastic Fest movies I saw. He was in the remake of Rabid Dogs, and he's so freaking good. But anyways, definitely, this is like filmed on 16mm too, and the Blu-ray is absolutely gorgeous. Because they definitely took the transfer from the negative. But it is by the director of The Ordeal, which is also known as Calvier, and did a movie called Vinion. Those two movies are extremely high on my list. Like, I truly love both of those movies. He creates this world that cuts itself off from the rest of the world, and the characters, you're so engulfed into these characters and every of his, all of his films, because they're just so, just the situations that they get themselves in. The Ordeal is basically this traveling musician who breaks down in this like really podunk town. And this mechanic says he's going to fix his car, but it's going to take like 3 days. But he knows, he finds out he's a singer, and the mechanic's wife, who is now deceased, was a singer too. So he thinks that this is his wife that's come back, but the whole town, being that she was a whore in the town, everybody thinks that this guy is this guy's wife. So everybody tries to fuck her, fuck him. It is such a bizarro movie, but definitely really high up there. It's quite the ride. Vinion's really good too. It's about a missing child of a couple, and they go into this journey to try to find him, and it just gets ultra weird. But Alleluia's right up there, just being like, it's unforgettable. Like, it's so fucking good. Has a great musical breakdown during the film. That's kind of out of nowhere. Spoiler alert, I guess. But yeah, definitely pick that up. I know it's a little expensive on DVD and Blu-ray, but it's definitely worth your money. And last but not least, I watched this today, and this movie really, I don't know. Like, I really want to rewatch. I watched Tobe Hooper's Eaten Alive, which is basically this guy who runs this hotel who has a basically friend as an alligator. And it's hard to say, because this is one of these psychotronic hillbilly movies that is just so batshit insane. And being it's from Tobe Hooper, who is crazy himself, is doing this film. Like, I wanted to watch the special features right away, so I watched all the interviews with Tobe Hooper, and just solidifies the idea that he is insane. Like, I pulled up this one interview as well, not on the Blu-ray, but just on YouTube. It's Mick Garris does this, you know, round table thing with horror directors, and he just says to Tobe Hooper, he's like, you know, what's, you know, how do you come up with your ideas, you know, nightmares? He's like, oh, I love my nightmares. I just had a nightmare the other night where I had this like blue sludge in my hand, and I put it in my head, and that's where the nightmares came from. I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? You know, but it's just like the special features. He's just the same way. I mean, the movie looks beautiful. It's very colorful. It's very odd choices of lighting. But it is that, if anybody knows it, like psychotronic hillbilly horror, it's, you know, stuff like Poor Pretty Eddie and Psycho from Texas, that this type of these films where it's this just weird situations and weird, ultra weird things unfold. It's like you keep asking yourself, why don't you just fucking leave? Like, get in your car and go. Like, why do people keep coming to you? Why do people keep going here? But I think that's part of the charm. But I also don't know if it's just part of Tobe Hooper's like warped mind as well. So it's kind of hard to say, because we all hold Texas Chainsaw Massacre up there as one of the greatest horror films, you know, ever made. And it is. I truly think it's a great film. But what gives that movie so much adrenaline is the craziness. And honestly, I don't think that's intentional. I just think that's Tobe Hooper being crazy himself. And I think a lot of that emulates on to Eaten Alive, where you kind of see that same thing going for it. And I imagine when people give Tobe Hooper to make movies, this is how they turn out. When they look over his shoulder and help him, you get Poltergeist, you know. But there's all that, there's that huge rumor that Steven Spielberg directed Poltergeist. And the more and more I watch Tobe Hooper films, the more and more I believe that.
Huh. Yeah.
So such a very weird movie. I'm going to revisit it in a few months to see, because it just, it really hit me off guard. It really felt like I was on drugs, which I am because I'm sick. So maybe that had to do something.
Could be.
But anyways, that's on my doorstep.
Sweet. I don't know, dude, I don't know where you find the time to watch all this shit, man. After Fantastic Fest. Or was this leading up to Fantastic Fest?
All this is after Fantastic Fest.
God damn you, man.
I've been sick, man.
Oh, that's right. You've had nothing but time.
So
I'm
sorry
you.
For my congestion and clearing of my throat.
It's all good. I got a couple, not too much. I rented Into the Grizzly Maze, because I was hoping to get to Backcountry, whatever, the next night. And so I was like, well, let's watch Into the Grizzly Maze. Oh, it has it has a pretty good cast, man, you know.
It's got a great cast. But the CGI bear in the movie.
Yeah, James Marsden,
so
they got
thick.
Billy Bob Thornton, Thomas Jane, Scott Glenn's in this. I mean, you know, I mean, for all, it's pretty... It's okay. It's generic. I noticed the CGI generic. Bear. It's the CGI.
There's a couple sequences,
a couple
where
bad
it
shots.
Looks like a cartoon.
I feel like they use a real bear in certain areas.
Yeah, they did, but there's just so much like CGI bear, and just, I don't know, there's just, the movie's incredibly boring for as how intense it really should be, it seems.
Yeah, it should be a lot more intense than it is. It's okay. I rented it. Glad I didn't buy it. You can rent it in HD for all it's worth. You can rent it in HD. You cannot buy it in HD.
Well, I think in every other country it's on Blu-ray. And I think it's titled The Red Machine.
Right, but here they just said, ah, screw it. I'm gonna slap this on DVD.
Yeah.
Maybe they won't notice the bad CGI bear.
I don't know, but, man. I mean, I think there's plenty of shots where it just really takes you. There's this aerial shot with the bear at one point, where like the fire's around it and it's like heaving up in the air, and it looks so bad. Like, why do you even have that shot if you knew it was going to be that?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough with these movies because you rely on, you know, people to. You know, like with Jaws or any of these creatures movies, like all the older movies in the 80s and 70s, like they're, you know, yeah, they may maybe hokey in certain spots, but you believe that the people are in somewhat danger. Like,
right,
you
but some
believe
animals
it, but...
look real. I mean,
oh,
Jaws
yeah.
looks real.
No, totally.
The movie,
no. I think
the movie
Jaws
Grizzly
looks
real. I mean, we have newer films like, you know, Blackwater, which is a killer crocodile
yeah.
movie. You have, you know, The Reef, which is sharks. You have Open Water.
Yeah.
You know, you have even Backcountry, where, you know, the bear, like Razorback. All these,
yeah.
The breed even. I mean, we have...
Oh, totally, yep.
Like, I know you can't put a real fucking grizzly bear on set with actors, of course. But there's... From what history, we've watched plenty of movies that it's possible.
You gotta find a way to either... I don't know. CGI animals are never the answer. I remember watching The Ring 2, and they have those CGI
deer
or whatever.
Oh God!
Dear God, that's horrible. And
no
even
pun intended.
in Let Me In, or yeah, Let the Right One In, the CGI cats take you out of an otherwise pretty solid effects, you know, movie. The cat scene. I mean, all these movies have these CGI issues, but when you deal with like live animals for some reason, or even ghosts, like Mama is one that just, that CGI just ruins any dread that movie has. But animals in particular, I think, are big ones that is hard to do CGI. And you know, Into the Grizzly Maze is probably going to be on Netflix at some point, and if you're, I don't know, half drunk or on your way to getting drunk, throw it in, I guess. Or if you need something to help you fall asleep. I mean, the cast is really great. Everyone's trying hard.
Yeah, the elements are there. It just falls short because of the bear.
Yeah.
They don't do enough with the bear, and when they do, it just doesn't feel right.
I mean, they try with the gore. Like, the gore is super, they don't skimp on anything. So
Into the Grizzly Maze.
It's okay. It's okay. I don't know. Well, I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. It was all right. So moving on here, I have been dreading the Poltergeist remake ever since I heard about it. And
I should have talked you into it. I gave it props.
You gave it props, but I still was kind of hesitant because, Poltergeist is a fun film. You had given it props, and that kind of made me interested, but everything that I read about the remake was just, like, mean-spirited and just, like, it seemed like everyone hated it. And I just couldn't find anything at all positive about it. And then I saw the Blu-ray saying that it had an extended cut, but also, there was, it's bare bones. No extra features at all. Like, nothing. So I'm like, oh, shit. None of the filmmakers are even, did any sort of press package or anything to talk up the film. So I broke down and bought it just because the extended cut really, I really wanted to check that out. And I don't know. I'm foolish with my money. And figured, what the hell, I had bought Pompeii, I might as well buy this and give it a shot. So, anyway, I sat down and watched the extended cut, man. I really dug it. Like, I thought that the, are you there? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
The extended cut basically adds about 8 to 10 minutes in the front of the film, which is all the family, oriented stuff, and which kind of helps, bring out the family more and really, you get to know these people. Because what I read was that everyone was just kind of cookie cutter type characters and there was no character development. Well, I mean, I haven't seen the theatrical cut, so I can't really see what the differences were. But what I read was it was all the beginning. I watched it. I really, I got into the characters. I got kids. They're all interested in technology and everything like that. My 3-year-old's watching the iPad right now. And that family dynamic really came through and then moving along into the film and the haunting starts happening, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it gets crazy. There's some kind of, the effects aren't the greatest, but neither were the original effects. The original effects were optical, but they weren't that great either. So as as a remake, I think for me, it was one of the stronger remakes I've seen recently. And I think since my kids, I think could relate to the kids in this film a little more, I want to watch it with them and kind of see what they think. But I dug it, man. I thought it was solid. I don't really get the absolute hate for the film, except I love
because it's called Poltergeist. Well, that's why.
Yeah, but
That movie could have been called Haunted in a House, and people would have liked it.
Yeah,
being it was called Poltergeist, it was doomed from the beginning because people didn't want to like it. I think that's the main problem with remakes, and especially that. Because I watched it, and, I'm not a huge fan of the original Poltergeist. I think it's an okay movie. I don't think it's anything special. But that's just me, which I know a lot of people love it. But with this one, it's not that bad. But I think, honestly, if they called it something else, everything would have been fine. Change the names of the characters and made it a Poltergeist ripoff, people would have liked it more than rather calling it Poltergeist and calling it a remake. It was doomed from the get-go.
Yeah, but it was from the director of Monster House, solid cast, I feel like they went along with the storyline of Poltergeist and they did a few changes here and there and that warrant a remake. I mean, it definitely was a remake, and with the ghosts operating through electricity, like in the original, I thought it was okay. I seen some shoddy CGI here and there. I mean,
the world that he goes into is probably the only CGI that is really, that looks a little off.
I am Legend bad.
Yeah, but dude, that whole drill sequence.
Oh yeah, dude.
Fucking that's scary as shit. I was like, Willow was grasping my arm about cut off my circulation during it. And, I just think that the film does a lot of cool things and it tries to tread some new ground, and it achieved it.
Yeah.
It's got a good cast. I actually want to see the extended part because, you know, I think the movie all around was decent. I wasn't bored at all. I think the characters were decent, but if there's more character development, the family, count me in.
Yeah, it's tough with the kids, and it's all, you know, it's all that I'm sure that the studio said, oh, cut it, boring, but, you know, it really does, it helps. You kind of, you know, everyone was complaining, like, oh, this guy lost his job, like, how does he afford his house? It's like, well, idiots, he sold his old house that he can't afford and is buying a much cheaper house, you know?
Yeah. That's the simple thing. People are looking for reasons to hate it. Right. Yeah. People are just looking to hate it just to hate it.
Yeah.
Like, you could have made they should have made a Poltergeist sequel, called it A New Beginning, and totally, they could have got away with
totally.
It.
Totally. Yep. Give it some tagline, you're good to go.
And then people would have been like, oh, it's a sequel to Poltergeist. Well, you know, no more sequels, but hey, it's not that bad. Because that always happens. Like, oh, it's a sequel. Like, you know, if you remade, like, we have Tremors 5.
Right. I forgot to mention.
We have Tremors 5, but if they remade Tremors, everybody would have been in an uproar.
Yeah.
Now it's like Tremors 5. It's like, hey, man, a new Tremors movie coming out in like 2015. Isn't that great? But if it was a remake, people would be saying different shit.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. And people, that's why I always said people need to lighten up.
Yeah.
Because remake, reboot, sequel, it doesn't matter. A movie's a movie. And like, one of my favorite quotes ever was one of our guests from Justin Beam. He said, no movie hurts another. And he's absolutely right. No movie does harm another. It's just a movie. It's there to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's some stuff in this, some sequences that, like you said, the drill sequence. I really love how they handled the hands in the TV when she comes to the TV that first time. Like, I don't know, man. I wasn't scared. But you know what? My kids, when they see this, they're going to be shitting their pants, I think.
That's what it's all about. You know,
they're going to be scared. And my 3-year-old actually walked in during the tree sequence, and
tree sequence is pretty cool.
And he was very concerned about what was happening. And he goes, "That's scary. I'm scared." And then I pause it, and then he walks up and he goes, "Turn it on." So you know, it was, I don't know, my 3-year-old. Has some horror leanings, I think. So we'll see where that happens. I got a couple more here. October rolls around. I fail every year to hit 31 horror movies, but I try. So I did a list. I mean, 31 Days of Horror. These are all the movies, or 31 Days of Halloween. These are all the movies I'm gonna try to get to. They're all not necessarily horror, and I had put the movie School Spirit on there.
And I gave a shit.
I didn't think it was going to be as much a 80s sex comedy as it turned out it would be. I figured there'd be some more supernatural stuff going on. This stuff is barely glazed over. You get, oh, he's a ghost, and oh, he can see naked chicks, you know, and oh, he can turn
it's
himself
so
real.
It's so good, though. That's the thing. It's right, like, but, a really good movie.
So as a Halloween film, you know, mild failure on my part. He's a ghost. There's some wiggle room there. So I wanted to kind of start off with something light, but, you know, whatever. But as a standalone 80s, you know, 80s sex comedy, I mean, it's goofy as shit. There's a ton of
TNA. It's so good. It's definitely one of the best, like, underrated sex comedies out there. It's really fucking good.
It's fun.
I watched,
it was like a Roger Corman DVD. It was Panascan or whatever, cropped or whatever.
Dude, but the movie's good.
But I don't know. I don't know if it was shot that way or not. But there are some good looking women in that.
Yes.
So then I watched that. So the next night I needed to do you. I needed Brad to be proud of me. So I watched the movie Housebound.
Oh.
Which is it Australian or New Zealand?
New Zealand.
New Zealand. I dug the hell out of this thing. It started off kind of slow, and I didn't really know where this was going. It was like, it's like marketed, or I don't know if it's marketed, but everything I read said it was in like a comedy. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, this isn't really a comedy. Like, there's some witty writing here and there, but this is definitely not a horror comedy. It's a solid flick. It has twists and turns, and just when I was kind of getting bored with it, like, oh god, another haunted house movie, because I'd just seen Poltergeist, it starts twisting around and really, really smart writing and just a fun ride. It's kind of a, you know, the generic roller coaster of a movie applies here. But I dug the hell out of this thing. And it wasn't like super dark, but it's definitely not a comedy. Like, what do you think?
People love it. That's one film that I did not understand the love for. I didn't walk out of it because I was bored, but it played at Fantastic Fest last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out because people, like you said, like it really wasn't that funny. But
well, it's
people,
not a comedy.
People were knee slapping, like,
really?
like chuckling at the top of their lungs, laughing within like the first like 20 minutes, just hysterical. And I was like, you know what? Fuck this.
It was kind of like.
I can't even pay attention.
Shrug, like, oh, that's kind of humorous. Oh, that guy, yeah, you know, the writing.
You don't understand this. Wow. The only down part of Fantastic Fest is that people have to amplify shit like that. So I just walked out, and I was like, I'll catch it on VOD, I guess, because that ruined it for me. Wow. But it's not that bad. Willow fucking loved it. She thought it was hysterical.
Yeah, it's another one that I think, like a younger, you know, older kid, is it PG-13?
I believe so, yeah.
But it was like PG-13 without, like cutting corners to get there. If you know what I mean, you know, like it's just a solid. Like,
this is an old fashioned PG-13.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was good. So yeah, Housebound. Check that out if you haven't. I think it's on Netflix, so you might as well check it out.
Yeah, it's been on Netflix for a while.
And then finally, I sat the kids down. It was time. My daughter is at that age. She's 10 now, and she's really starting to ask me about horror movies, and she's asking me about like Chucky and Annabelle and I think she mentioned Poltergeist, but then she saw Gremlins sitting up on my shelf and she was like, Dad, what is Gremlins and can we watch it? And I was like, heck yes, you can watch it. So me and my oldest two sat down, and my son was very hesitant to watch it. And just seeing how Gremlins captivates this age group, 10-year-old and 8-year-old, was like just magic. You know, Joe Dante directed, Spielberg produced, and it's like the movie doesn't start off with any scares at all. The first like 40 minutes are just set up and very whimsical and very light, but slowly, you know, things start going a little more wrong until it's just mayhem up on the screen with all the gremlins, and kind of seeing how the movie pulled my kids along. My son almost gave up on it. He almost ran out of the room at one point during the science teacher scene.
That is probably the scariest part.
Yeah,
of
that's
the movie.
The scariest the movie it gets. And I was like, I made him come back in and give it a shot. No pun intended. But they had a good time with it. My daughter was like 100% invested. Squirmed and kind of would come over near me right at the right times and squeeze my arm. And then once the mayhem happened, they were both just laughing and eating it up and cheering Gizmo along. And it was just a fun time with my kids. So my daughter's all up for Gremlins 2. My son, he's on the fence.
Gremlins 2 is, I think it's
that's
great.
A straight up comedy.
Yeah, it's more of a straight up comedy. There's no like really scary moments other than maybe when the thing does turn into a spider.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We did have a... where are my kids at? We did have a little Santa Claus scare. Because there is a scene where... It gets dark where the girl... what's her name?
Phoebe Cates.
Mm-hmm. Where she's explaining about how her dad died, and she talks about that.
It's fucking terrible.
And that's the last time I believe
this. That's probably the scariest
that
part of the movie.
Is dark, and I totally forgot about that. And both my kids looked at me with like kind of horror in their eyes. That, you know, when she said there's no Santa, but I explained to them that because that bad thing happened, she just couldn't believe in Santa Claus anymore.
You know, and BJ uses that as her monologue when she like tries out for shit.
Oh, really? Oh man,
yeah.
It's that scene. It really has almost no place in that film. You know what I mean?
It
but
fits,
it's
though.
it's such a great little monologue there. It's so dark and just heavy. You know, right before the movie gets batshit crazy. You know, it's almost maybe they needed that to kind of transition into the batshit craziness. But anyway, Gremlins holds up.
Yeah, of course.
A great way to introduce your kids to horror. Brad, have you done? I know somebody sent me a link. Have you done any lists on movies to introduce kids? You know, good kid horror movies.
No, but I'm going to.
Maybe you should.
Yeah, because I have a lot. I have a lot that are very unknown. So I got a great response on my Kitty Killer.
Yeah.
List because I had some really crazy movies on there that. You know, that's the thing. I'm not doing it to be pretentious or like, look at me, I know more than you. But I really fucking get tired of these lists that it's like
all the same stuff all the time.
25 horror films you've never heard of. The Shining. Psycho. And it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, it's insulting to, you know, just normal people reading it, let alone like horror fanatics.
Yeah.
You know, the top 10 movies that will scare the shit out of you.
The Exorcist.
The Exorcist. This Sinister. The Conjuring. And it's like, why don't you, like, when you literally tell me, hey, give me movies I've never heard of, like, I want to go out and try to find them. Because if you're saying that they're good and never heard of, that's a challenge. So I want
right.
to see it.
Yeah, and I think we've all seen.
And that's the whole point,
yeah.
You know?
Well, most of us have seen so much, you know, or heard of so much,
yeah.
Maybe haven't got around to seeing them like me, but it's always fun to discover. Like we all may have seen a shit ton of movies, but
yeah.
We still want to discover new stuff. And
I just get tired of lists like doesn't really do anything even for, you know,
yeah.
want to be more knowledgeable horror fans that are like up and coming, like even kids,
yeah.
You know, this fucking BuzzFeed list. Have you seen these 50 movies? Yeah, fucking, they're on fucking TBS, you dumb shit.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, like, I set out to make that list to make it, you know, of course I have some, you know, bigger movies in there, like The Brood and, you know.
Yeah.
You know, this is stuff like the Children, you know, 2008 Children. But I also have some, like, extremely rare obscurity movies in there, like Alien Zone, that, shit, I don't even know where you can fucking find that movie. You know, I have it on tape, but
right.
Like, fucking find Alien Zone and let me know that you actually found it.
That'd be amazing.
Which is also known as Alien Zone, such a dumb name for it. It's originally titled House of the Dead.
Oh.
Which is basically this guy who gets trapped in this, he's cheating on his wife and he gets trapped in this house because he's trying to, like, escape through the back door. Goes inside this house to, like, you know, wait for everything to cool down, and then he meets this person that starts unraveling these, like, crazy stories that actually happened in the house. And there's this really fucking terrifying kid sequence. Like, it's legitimately, kind of unnerving.
Nice.
So, but anyways, yeah, I'll do a kid's list, because there's a bunch of shit
that'd
out there.
That'd be good.
That
I mean, I'm like, my daughter is getting so into it. I want to kind
yeah.
of bring her through and kind of introduce her into some things. Paper House is on the list for me and her to watch. Poltergeist
yeah.
remake is on the list for me and her to watch. Maybe my son, if I can talk him into it. And then,
yeah, that's how I started off Willow.
Like that. Yeah.
That's how I started off. Cause I was very careful. Like I planned it all out. Cause I didn't want to, you know, there's too many people, even adults that you listen to, is like, oh, my mom or dad made me watch that movie. And and now they don't like horror films.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's like eating that food that you never wanted to eat. Like, Janice has this thing with, like, Smacks. Like, her babysitter used
oh, really?
To make her eat Smacks, oh, and now she can't even stand the sight of them.
Yeah, so my son...
What's all wrong about making people watch yeah. horror films? So I really eased her into it, like, kind of with, like, kind of action-adventure stuff. You know, building up to, like, Monster Squad was kind of the main thing,
mm-hmm.
seeing how she handled that. And she watched that when she was, like, 4 or 5.
Yeah, my kids have seen Monster Squad.
So,
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
so
we'll
put
see.
A list together.
We'll see. My son, probably not so much. If he doesn't want to watch any of these, like, I'm like, dude, cool, go in the other room and play some Minecraft. He may come around. I came around to horror late, so...
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
So
yeah.
We'll see. But right now, my daughter's enthusiastic about
yeah.
it, so I gotta rein in that enthusiasm and kind of yeah. guide it along.
Everybody reacts differently, so you just
yeah.
have to, you know.
My daughter said that one night when I was watching a Chucky movie, she came downstairs, and I must have fallen asleep during the movie, and she watched part of Child's Play, apparently.
Nice.
Yeah. I was like, well, it wasn't scary, right? She's like, well, kind of, but it was a puppet. I'm like,
oh, dude. Exactly. That's the one movie that really fucked me up as a kid. Like, it's the only movie that really scared me as a kid.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and now I'm cool with it, of course, but, like, it was just, like, that movie kind of really did me in. But I saw it when I was, like, you know, 4.
Yeah. I if I show Noah that right now, because he doesn't understand, like, the difference between, like, you know, he would probably be scarred for life. Right now, he probably cannot stand trees, because I think that moment meant, like, the next day, he was like, Daddy, scary trees, watch out for his trees.
Yeah.
All right, let's move into this, man. Let's jump into your Fantastic Fest report.
Yeah. So,
gotta find some music for that.
So, Fantastic Fest. Everybody hears about the movies because, you know, we're kind of the first to see them. You know, it's definitely a premiere, world premiere, you know, festival other than TIFF. A lot of U.S. premieres more or less because TIFF sometimes gets them first. But for the majority of a lot of stuff, it's the world premiere of a lot of these films. But, you know, every site, everything kind of does – you know, the movies, Fantastic Fest is experience. I like going to hang out with my friends more than anything. Kind of movies come second. The experience of Fantastic Fest is just overwhelming, and it is so much fun that is what makes you go. You know, who cares what movies are playing? You know, it's about hanging out with your friends and what you're going to do and the crazy activities that Tim League, who is basically running this thing, is going to come up with. Every year it's an event, and it's not the same every year. That's the coolest thing about it. There's a couple traditions, but for the most part, like, it's new every year, so you're not going to get the same thing. For example, this year, let me start off with kind of the tradition for the most part. What we all do is Fantastic Fest usually starts on the Thursday. It's the, you know, the last Thursday of the end of the month in September. So, yeah, I think it was this time it was because it rolled over into October this year. so anyways, usually, most people try to get there on Wednesday. The fest starts on Thursday. Wednesday you roll in, try to roll in early, because it's tradition to go to Salt Lick, which is a restaurant not in Austin. It's, you know, a few miles out, kind of in fucking nowhere. But it's this huge fucking barbecue place. When I say it's huge, I mean, this thing probably seats a fucking 1,000 people.
I see pictures and I get just so jealous.
It's ridiculous. It's expensive for the most part. Because they do parties. So we have, you know, my buddy JC actually put together the party. Ours was a little smaller this year, but we still had maybe about, you know, 35, 40 people in our group. And sometimes we could have up to like 75. And, you know, I knew even one year we probably like had 100. but everybody that's close in the circle, you know, comes. I mean, we've had, you know, AJ Bowen there with us, which he was actually here this time, just for Salt Lick. Apparently, I think he married his friends in Austin, so he, like, came down. He's only there for a night. But Elijah Wood comes and just, you know, those are, like, the two main people that come to hang out for Fantastic Fest, even if they don't have a movie there. Bria Grant is usually there with her brother Zane, which they were there this year. So yeah, plenty of people come by just to stop and check out movies because they're movie lovers. So yeah, Wednesday night you do Salt Lick. It's about, I think it runs about $40 for your plate, and it's literally all you can eat until you fucking get the meat sweats and you pass out. You bring your own beer, like in a cooler. Everybody like packs up coolers and you bring your own beer. I mean, you can get drinks there, but they allow you to bring your own beer on the premises.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, set your cooler down at your table and just fucking drink. But yeah, it's just, you know, coleslaw, pickles, onions, you know, ribs, brisket, you know, potato salad. And you just eat until you're fucking sick. That's the whole thing. It's like most people don't eat at all that day just so they can eat Salt Lake to get your $40 worth. and then afterwards, do two different things. It's usually this is where the group divides, is that you go to Pinball's Arcade, which is in Austin, which is literally a pinball arcade, like pinball machines from the 70s, even to newer shit. And they have other games as well, you know, like Skee Ball and, you know, Guitar Hero and, you know, that kind of stuff. Or you can go miniature golf at the Peter Pan golf course. Two different things. And even some people just go home because it's an early start in the morning. So, you know, you go to bed, you wake up. It depends on what they're doing for opening night film. Sometimes they might play one film or two films. Sometimes movies start at like 5. This year, they technically didn't have an opening movie. They considered kind of Laser Team the unofficial opener, which is the Rooster Teeth movie. But that's pretty much it. So this year wasn't, they didn't have a big opening. Personally, I think what happened was because the opening theme party was a huge Christmas party. Like, they had fucking Santa Claus, they had, you know, the big throne that Santa sits on. Everybody was dressed up as elves that worked at the draft house, you know, Christmas stockings everywhere, Christmas food, you know, a whole fucking buffet of food in the lobby after the movie, Christmas trees, Christmas light, just a full thing. So what I personally think happened is that they were trying to get Krampus to play as opening night film, and I think something probably fell through, and they already had all this Christmas shit, and they were like, oh, what the fuck are we going to do with it? Let's just have a Christmas party. So the Christmas party happened opening night, and that's always fun because it's definitely an experience, and, you know, a lot of times they just have free beer and free drinks, free beer galore at Fantastic Fest. So if you're a beer drinker, you're in for a treat. Is you're going to love or dislike Shiner by the end of this festival.
I love Shiner.
You get a lot of free Shiner because Shiner sponsors the festival.
Oh, nice.
So they'll be like, you'll be just hanging out in the Highball, which is kind of the restaurant / club / you know, dance floor / karaoke place / sit down and eat breakfast thing where the Fantastic Fest arcade is. Highball's everything. So you'll just be standing there, and a woman will walk up, like, with 6 Shiners in an ice bucket and say, here you go, you know, and you don't pay for anything. Like, it's just all free. So definitely people like Shiners. It's definitely for them. You know, other things that happen at Fantastic Fest, and one thing that is my biggest concern is the fucking flu. Pretty much everybody gets sick by the end of Fantastic Fest. I mean, all of us are running on, you know, 3-4 hours of sleep. You know, our immune system's down. We're pretty much all from, you know, a different state, so our bodies are getting used to the air. And we're also close to one another during the whole festival within the theater.
Right.
So germs just kind of linger. Pretty much everybody I know and hung out with got sick, and I'm one of them too. So you always have the flu.
Stop making out with each other.
Well, that's impossible. There's plenty of sex at Fantastic Fest. You know, another cool thing that happens at Fantastic Fest is called the Fantastic Feud, which is something I didn't go to in the beginning, but I've come to like it a lot more. They pit, you know, a selective number of people. Usually it's 5 versus 5. It used to be U.S. versus you know, the foreign, you know, the foreigners, the not USA, which is always funny because, you know, it's just, you know, Todd Brown who does the international programming. So we have the, you know, US team and the international team, which everybody wants the USA, you know, we chant USA, USA through the whole feud. But Scott Weinberg hosts it. He always does a fabulous job. He's fucking super good at it. My buddy Max does questions, and they just pit five against five. And on the board, they have, you know, two categories to choose from, and whoever wins, wins. And it's a fucking disaster. Like, I mean, everybody's drinking. This year, they didn't do international and U.S. team. They did women versus men, which was a lot of fun. So Britt Hayes was on the team, Clark Wolf, Jenny Amato, another girl, Kareen, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, but she directed Girl Fight in the Invitation because the Invitation was there. And Roxanne Benjamin was on the ladies team. And I don't know the guys that were on the guys. I just know Todd Brown and Elijah Wood were two of them on the male team. But males won by technicality. I think the females should have won anyway, but you know, they do questions, you know, beer is thrown, food, slurs, everything you can imagine.
It must just stink once everyone leaves.
Well, that's another thing. Fantastic Fest. There's a lot of people that don't bathe. You know, I said this in, tried to be in the nicest way possible when I was tweeting, is that Fantastic Fest has a lot of PSAs, like, you know, about Fantastic Fest or about not talking. There needs to be one on hygiene, because there's a few, and by a few I mean a lot, of people that don't bathe or change their clothes or whatever. I don't know what happens, but the smell of BO is so fucking bad sometimes. Like, it's to the point where it turns your stomach. So that's one thing you have to deal with. So by day four, it's really bad. another thing that's a lot of fun is Karaoke Apocalypse, which my friend Allison Murphy hosts herself with a live band on stage. So,
oh, nice.
They have about 100 songs that you can choose from. You sign up, and the band plays them, and you sing. It's a really fucking good time, you know, a good time for the drunk people to embarrass themselves. And that's what it's all about. Karaoke is about embarrassing yourself. Except Sam Zimmerman from used to be Shock to Your Drop, and now he's like a curator at Shudder. He did the best rendition of Bloodstains by Agent Orange I've ever seen in my entire life. He did fucking great. But anyways, yeah, it's just a fun time to watch people just get up there and sing and, you know, sing along. And I lost my voice that night because I was singing. There was this lady that got up. She was like a bartender, and she sang Hearts Alone, and she fucking crushed it. Like, she hit those high notes like a motherfucker. It was great. Another thing that happens is the Fantastic Debates, which is basically a boxing match. They take people that want to take a topic and debate about it in the ring and then box it out at the end. This year, I know Joe Bigos, the director of Almost Human in the Mind's Eye, boxed Mickey Kidding that did Darling and Pod. Basically, Cronenberg versus Lynch, like who is a better filmmaker. And so they basically stand at their podiums, they argue, they have, you know, their side tells their story, and then they get in the ring and they box it out. This is something that I normally don't go to because there's too many movies playing. I don't want to miss it. So I usually watch the highlights like on YouTube the night after. I think the funniest one, though, is they always have a really funny one, was Andre Gower, who plays the lead kid in the Monster Squad. Boxed the internet, one of the ladies, the international programmer for Fantastic Fest, who is saying the Goonies is better than Monster Squad.
Oh.
So they argued that out, and then they boxed at the end, and he beat her up. But it's all in good fun. It's just, you know, Nick Robb boxed somebody else too. You know, it's fun to watch the highlights. I wish I still would have went to. Devon Faraci fought Joe Swanberg.
Oh.
And if people don't know who Joe Swanberg is, he's, you know, an independent filmmaker who makes a lot of mumblecore movies. Well, he was saying mumblecore is great, and then Farachi was calling it grumblecore, which he's just being a dick like he usually does. So they boxed. I didn't know how big of a dude Joe Swanberg is. This guy is huge, and he fucking leveled Devin Farachi. Like, to the point where Devin Farachi fell on his knees and, like, fell over.
Oh, wow.
Like, Joe Swanberg's a huge fucking guy. But anyways, he doesn't look that big, like, in the movies and stuff, but he's a fucking fairly big guy.
Yeah, he always looks kind of little.
Yeah, but he's not. I don't know if he beefed up for the fight or what, but it always a fun thing. I heard it's fun to go, but, like, most of these events take place during movies. So if it's up against the slot of a movie you really want to see, sometimes you have to skip out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, there's parties every night, free food, free beer, everything you can think of in between.
Basically, you gain about 50 pounds.
Yeah.
Through Fantastic Fest.
It's pretty tough. Then, they have a big closing night party. The closing night film this time was Bone Tomahawk, you know, Kurt Russell's new movie. And then we went to a ghost town.
Ooh.
Where every – it was literally a ghost town. And it was – I think it's a place to film movies, like westerns and shit is what it looked like. So it's basically this – vacant town, and inside every building they had an activity going on, which is really badass. Like, it was one part where I was just kind of weirded out and scared because I met up with John Portanova, who's been on the show a couple times. You know, he came in for the last day of Fantastic Fest, and, you know, he went to the party, and we walked into this one, it was like it wasn't the church. They were actually playing the Devil's Reign movie in the church. It was pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah, I saw some pictures. Tom Nix, I think, was tweeting.
Yeah, pictures. Yeah. So he went into this, and there's just this, you know, like banjo, accordion, you know, upright bass guitar band just playing like hillbilly music. And I'm like, man, I really feel like I'm going to fucking die in a cult right now. This is what this feels like. And the whole night felt like that. It was great. So, yeah, it's a big party, all, you know, basically free beer, free food. You know, stuff like that. And Tim League always goes out of his way to give some of the best parties. So that's pretty much it. I mean, you have the Fantastic Fest Arcade, which, you know, gamers get to bring their own games before they hit or get picked up by, you know, a major company. They have the Fantastic Fest Arcade that Wiley Wiggins hosts. People don't know who Wiley Wiggins is. He was the lead in Dazed and Confused. He leads the Fantastic Fest Arcade in Austin during Fantastic Fest. Sweet. So that's that's a big thing. And that's pretty much Fantastic Fest in a nutshell. One thing I did want to focus on and spend a little bit extra time on is that they always have kind of a, you know, I think they had a couple DJs this time, but they always have kind of a band or, you know, something going on. Well, this year they had this band called Itch.io. I did not know anything about Itch.io. I just heard Itch.io and I was like, okay, cool. So I was in a movie and I got out and I was walking in the lobby and met up with my buddy Pete Hall. And I was like, hey, man, what's going on? He's like sweating profusely. He's like, man, I just went in at the highball. Itch.io's playing. And I was like, oh, cool. I was like, what's going on? He's like, You have to actually see it to believe it. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I go in, and all I hear is tribal drums. And it is just loud. And there's just a ton of people in there. And it is, like, probably 100 degrees. And people are dancing around. Itch.io, I don't know how many band members there are. I would at least say there's at least between 16 and 20. But they are a heavy metal marching band.
Wow.
So it sounds like a fucked up football game. And they have about 7 members on stage, 3 members like playing like big fucking, you know, conga drums, like a bass player, 2 guitarists. And then the rest of the band is amongst the crowd. They have their drum sets like on their shoulders, like, you know, high school marching bands.
Yeah.
And others have these fucking huge speakers that are attached to the back, projecting the music that's being played on stage.
Oh my gosh.
So your mind is melting because this guy next to you, and the coolest part about it is that they'll corner you so you can't escape. And they're scary looking because they're all dressed in black. They have black face masks on. You can't really see their eyeballs.
Nice.
And they're completely covered. And they have these like big black sombreros that light up. And then they have this two-person Chinese dragon thing in the crowd dancing the whole entire time. Like literally a Chinese dragon jumping up and down, dancing, pushing you down, and everything else. And these people walking around on keyboards with giant speakers on their back trying to creep you out. Like, it is a fucking blast. I've never seen anything like this in my entire life, and I can't believe these guys aren't bigger because they're really fucking good on top of it.
All I know is that night, my Instagram feed was all Itch.io, people in the crowd at Itch.io. It was like...
Yeah, I mean...
that's all I saw that night. No one knew.
No one knew. Like, it was just one of those things like, well, when they get here, we'll figure it out. But man, when they got there, like the one guy is riding a bicycle around with fucking speakers attached to it in the crowd.
Wow.
And like they're just walking around like they would go out in the lobby with everybody else or go outside, keep playing the music. Like they're so interactive. And like it's not an exaggeration. There has to be at least 17 to 20 people in this band.
It's amazing.
Yeah, just look them up on YouTube. Just type in Itch.io, and it is fucking just like how it is.
I'm assuming they're more of a live band.
Yeah, yeah. Because I honestly think they would just sound too much like a marching band if you listen to them. Like, their stuff on their Spotify, they have Spotify, their music on Spotify, and it sounds like high school football music. I mean, it sounds good. It's pretty, you know, adrenaline pushing, but for the most part it's just, you know.
Is there lights and stuff like that, or not like laser light show, but they have a light show too?
Oh god, yeah. Dude, there's so much going on. Like, there's a lot going on during the show.
Hold on. I just found them on YouTube. No one can hear this, but I'm listening to them right now.
So
yeah, it sounds like a marching band.
Yeah, it's a marching band, but it's, I mean, being that they have kind of the drummer and, you know, of course they have multiple drummers, like 10 right. drummers. But they have, you know, a guitarist and a bass player on stage, too. But it's so fucking good.
It's just a big party.
It is. It's what it is. It's just a big party. But the music, like, it's amazing how well they work off one another without being up on stage. And because, I mean, all that noise has to be projecting here and there,
right?
You know? Like, musicians usually have earpieces in to hear the other musicians to see where they are. These guys are just like, let's fucking drum. So.
32-piece band.
What?
It says here that they're a 32-piece marching band.
Yeah. 32 seem, maybe they like switch in and out.
Maybe.
32 seems a little much, but
they must have reserves.
I wouldn't really be surprised if there wasn't, because I was just in the back.
Yeah.
And there was at least five of them or six around me. So they're probably even more up above. I have no idea. They're all over the place.
Well, who knows where they are if it's dark and everything.
Yeah, so I guess you could have 30-some people. They're like little ninjas, because that's what they look like. They all look like ninjas.
That's incredible. That's bucket list. I need to go to an Itch.io event. I'm not going to call it a concert event.
Apparently they only play like in Denver, Colorado.
It looks like they played L.A.
Well, I mean, there's special guest spots. I mean, obviously like Austin, Texas. But it looks like they're mainly
they're
based Denver in
based,
Denver.
Yeah.
But yeah, such an experience.
And okay?
They need to come back every Fantastic Fest.
You gonna be okay?
Why?
Are you gonna die on me?
I could. I tell you, man, having the flu sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry for everybody that's listening to me cough.
Oh, dude, it's not too bad. I'll take coughing rather than like somebody like sniffing and horking.
Well, that's the reason why I wanted to push off the recording, because the other day I was sniffing like crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's just a dry cough.
There you go. I'll take a dry cough. As long as you don't die.
Cool.
Or fall asleep. It's getting late for you. right now. So let's get to some of your favorite films, the films worth mentioning.
Sure.
Right?
Let me...
films to be on the lookout for this next year, because there's films that were on that debuted Fantastic Fest last year, just finally getting releases like today.
Yeah,
like Deathgasm's finally getting a release. $9.99 on Hulu.
South by Southwest,
by the way.
I'm not Fantastic.
Oh, South by. But Deathgasm is $9.99 right now.
Deathgasm's a blast
to own it on HD digital.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the things that play at South By get distro a lot quicker than the stuff at Fantastic
okay,
Fest.
Gotcha.
Some of the films that played at Fantastic Fest still haven't been out yet.
Ugh.
So, but anyways, I'll go through the ones worth mentioning. As a total, I saw 33 films at Fantastic Fest, which I would consider this year one of the best years for me, programming-wise. Last year I thought was great. This year, there was a lot of films that I truly loved, and a lot of films I wanted to see. So we'll go through this quickly. Thing is a lot of the films I did like, so I'm going to be mentioning a lot here, move probably fairly quick over some of these. The Lobster was one of the very first films I saw. It's by the director of Dogtooth, which should tell if anybody has seen Dogtooth. You kind of know what you're getting in for, except this is Dogtooth, but with an American cast like John C. Reilly and Colin Farrell, who do a fabulous job. It is about people that are lonely, who can't find a loved one, who go to a resort, and you have 30 days to find a partner. If you don't find your partner, you get turned into an animal of your choice.
Hmm.
Very, very unique premise, but very heartfelt and charming and just really fucking weird. But definitely one of the better films that I saw at Fantastic Fest, just because it's just very funny. Like, it's just a very, very funny movie.
What was the name of that again?
The Lobster. That's
the
right.
Lobster.
Everybody get a pen and paper out, seriously.
I'm trying to track these down.
Yeah, some of these films you won't be able to really see for a while. Some are out as of right now. Others will probably be a year, you know, or even more. Year Next, I saw in 2011, wasn't released till 2013. You know, so that kind of shit happens. One that is out... in theaters right now, Draft House Films picked it up. It's called The Keeping Room. It is a Southern story set back in the day with three women who are taking care of their home themselves and come in contact with some not so nice dudes, and kind of becomes kind of a survival thing for them. Not as exciting as I made it sound, but definitely Britt Marling is the lead, which she's super cute and a gorgeous, gorgeous woman.
Yeah, she's always pretty good in whatever she's in.
So, let's see. Next was, I forget what country this is from, Demon, which was kind of a fun take on a paranormal experience, kind of a haunting. It is kind of, all takes place at one night during a wedding.
Hmm.
So while everybody's occupied drinking and having fun, some demonic shit is going down. You'll like this next one. So next up, The Wave, which was directed by Roar Uktang? Uckard? Something like that?
He's the guy, he's the director of Fritz Vilch?
Yeah, Cold Prey and a movie called Escape.
Yeah, Escape's badass. If you guys haven't checked out Escape... it's awesome.
So you have The Wave, which is an natural disaster movie done right, quote unquote. Cool. It has the melodrama, and it literally has a 15-minute disaster, and kind of just focuses on characters and stuff like that. Kind of not my bag, per se.
Hmm.
Darling, which is Mickey Keating's new movie, which is a black and white, suspenseful thriller, horror noir with The Shining, Psycho, and Repulsion all mixed into one another. It's truly fascinating. Ashley Lauren Carter is in it, and she is so pretty. It's ridiculous. You get lost in her eyes so quick. But does a great job. Definitely, Mickey Keating is going to be one director to look out for. Dude's like 25, and this is like his third movie, and none of his movies are the same.
Nice.
I recently just watched his other movie because I saw Pod at South By.
Mm-hmm.
So when I heard Darling was playing here, I was like, okay, another horror film by the same guy. No way, shape, or form this is anything like one another. Dude's got talent, young kid. He's gonna be big time soon, guaranteed.
Sweet. Is Pod available on streaming?
Yeah, it's on VOD.
Nice, okay.
Next is a movie called Victoria. This was an experience. Victoria is a 2.5-hour movie that is entirely comprised of one shot.
Wow.
It is a movie about a woman that gets involved with some bank robbers. It is unbelievable. It's really hard to believe they did all this in one take, but that's what they said they did. Some of the bravest choices of filmmaking I've ever seen. So many chances to fuck up. Super fucking intense. I honestly don't know how they did it. But it is a fucking blast and a hell of a good movie. So definitely mark that down for ambitious filmmaking, number one. Number two, it's a great movie, and your actors are fucking phenomenal. Because the chemistry between everybody works so well. For a 2.5-hour movie, you're not bored at all, and the movie feels like it's like 50 minutes.
Wow.
It moves so quick, and it's so fucking intense. So good. Another film that I saw, that artsploitation, I actually hung out with Eric Bressler
when
I was there. Hung out with Bria Grant a tiny bit. You said I had drinks with Bria Grant. People would be upset if they knew I had drinks with Bria Grant.
I had drinks with
Jessica Cameron. No, I got to talk to Bria for a little bit, because we were always in. I kept on texting her. I was like, hey, doing this, and then she was always in another movie. Apparently, she brought her mom, which was super cute. She brought her mom nice. And her brother. Hung out with Eric Bressler a little bit, and two films that I saw there that they are distributing. Der Bunker is one, and the other one is German Angst. On German Angst, that's all I'm going to say. That was a big letdown
for really?
People that were behind it. Yeah, very, very tame and way too polished. Der Bunker, though, is fucking hysterical. It is this guy who's looking for an apartment to work on his work, and he comes across a family of weirdos, and it is fucking hysterical. That's all I'm going to say. It is delightfully charming and so fucking weird. I have a feeling it's going to be a big hit for artsploitation coming up. That should be released.
Sweet.
I think this year, I'm not sure. Saw a movie called Dog Legs about an underground wrestling ring for disabled people.
Hmm.
This goes for people that are paraplegic to mental retardation.
Is it a documentary?
Yep.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Very, very odd and kind of hard to watch sometimes, because you're watching able-bodied people beat the shit out of paraplegics.
Okay. I thought it was... Okay, never mind. I thought it was kind of like Special Olympics, where everyone's kind of on the same playing field.
Nope.
Nope. Okay. No,
you literally have this one guy who is only can move his head, and he can move his leg a little bit, goes against a 300-pound woman who just steps on him and kicks him in the face. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to watch.
Wow, okay.
Another film I watched was Camino, Zoe Bell and Nacho Vigalondo. So much potential in this movie, but kind of fell flat for me. Accelerated Media's putting it out, so you should be able to see that soon. What We Become was so goddamn generic. It's an infection movie, and it plays out like every infection movie.
Just watch Contagion.
My buddy said I was going to quote my buddy Jay Hawkinson, who's Sleestack on Twitter. He made a really good point. He said it seems like a little excerpt out of World War Z, which is very true. One movie that I absolutely loved and adored, it's in my top 10, was The Devil's Candy, which is directed by Sean Byrne, who did The Loved Ones from a few years back. He is back with a fucking heavy metal horror film that is fucking incredible. It stars Ethan Embry, who is doing a phenomenal job.
He's killing it, man.
In genre films. Yeah. Like, he is coming back, and he is fucking relentless. And this movie has the best fucking family that you, like, we talk about family in horror films. Like, this is, by God, the cutest and sweetest, like, family I've seen in a while. Who's this dad? He's the dad. He's fucking Ethan Embry. He's fucking hardcore heavy metal. His like 13-year-old daughter, she loves metal, and his wife like is all like, you know, nice and pristine, but she's got like the blue streak in her hair that, you know, hey, I used to be metal, but not anymore. who come in contact with a house that possesses people, and they fight for their life for some shit that's going down.
Sweet.
Really, really great movie. Great fucking soundtrack. I usually don't like Metallica, but Metallica fucking works in this movie.
The Black Album is my favorite album.
So, next up is, it's toss up between these next two being my number one and number two of Fantastic Fest, and also probably going to be up there with me for the year. First one, mainly people have heard of already. It's called The Witch.
Yeah.
It's about a family that is banished from the town, who is shunned away into their little house, who is being haunted by something in the forest.
Does this take place in like Middle Ages type or like Puritan times or something like that?
Yeah, like the 1800s, like pilgrims and shit.
Okay, yeah. Something like that.
It is, like, to me, it takes a lot for me to get scared. It takes a lot for me to be unsettled, and this movie did all those things. People are reading it different ways. A lot of people think it's boring. I think the sense of dread that is built up in this movie until it's fucking bombastic. I said bombastic twice. Damn it. This fucking epic ending, I would can say, and you'll be fucking wanting to worship Black Phillip by the end of this fucking movie. Mm. It is so fucking good. Black Phillip is the shit. So anyways, truly fucking terrifying movie. Like, I haven't been that scared since, and I don't get scared. I'm not like fucking biting my nails and fucking shivering, but to the point where I'm like really anxious, to the point where I kind of want the movie to be over because my heart is racing. The only other movie that's done that recently is probably Sinister. But I tell you, man, the last 20 minutes of that movie, I like wanted just to be over because I was getting to that anxious point. truly a fucking terrifying movie. So great. Another movie that's terrifying on a totally different level, which is the number one, it won Best Picture for Fantastic Fest. It is getting a wide release April 15th, but it is, Jeremy Saulnier's The Green Room, which director of Murder Party and The Blue Ruin, is now up with The Green Room. Holy fuck, dude. Like, oh, shit. Like, this, it is about a punk band that plays a show at a skinhead bar. Something goes wrong, and these motherfuckers have to survive the night against a fucking army of skinheads. And this shit is so fucking intense, so brutal, so well acted. The script is fucking solid. It is fucking terrifying on a whole different level. And by God, it's a lot of fun.
Nice.
Like, Jeremy Saulnier is going to be the fucking king of cinema. I guarantee you. Between Blue Ruin and this.
Blue Ruin, man, that movie is so good.
all right, amplify that by 10, and that's Green Room.
Wow.
But it's like that through the whole fucking movie. Wow. It is ridiculous. So, yeah, it's fucking incredible. I'm so happy it's getting a wide release April 15th.
Sweet.
Limited April 1st and wide April 15th, I think they said. So hopefully you'll be able to see that at your local cinema.
Nice.
Another film that was completely out of place for me, but I truly love this movie. It was... It's so fucking good. It's called Liza and the Fox... Liza the Fox Fairy. It is Hungarian. It is about a super cute girl who is taking care of this old Japanese lady who is a caretaker, and her Japanese lady is obsessed with this old Japanese pop singer from the 50s. And so, taking care of her, she's kind of had this fascination with him and kind of falls in love with this, like, dead guy who doesn't exist anymore. But he exists in this other parallel universe and loves that she loves him. And she sings to his records, and the fucking songs are super catchy. And it's kind of a musical at the same time.
Hmm.
And being that she wants to meet somebody, she starts seeing all these other people. Well, this ghost of this guy doesn't like that she's seeing other people. So he makes accidents happen.
Oh, shit.
But it's kind of gory. It's kind of fun. It's very Jean-Pierre Jeunet, who did, like, Amelie and Micmacs. Very on par with that.
Huh. Okay. Is it stylized? Or the way
Yeah, yeah. Very colorful. Very
nice. Okay.
Very smart, very cute, stuff like that.
Cool.
Another film that I saw, The Similars, which is about a kind of a Spanish-Mexican film noir about a bunch of people that turn out to look the same in a bus station one night. That's all I got on that. another film that Drafthouse Films is rescuing. It's a movie called Dangerous Men. It's from, like, 89. It's by a filmmaker, John Rad, who is now deceased. His family helped bring this movie together.
Wow.
It is on par with, like, Miami Connection and stuff like that.
Okay.
It is a blast. It's super funky. It's super weird. It's just a funny movie because it's just so bad. So hopefully people will enjoy it as much as they did Miami Connection. Next up was Baskin, which was in my top 10, which is in fucking sane. It is about a group of five police officers who take Reservoir Dogs, but make it a satanic movie. And that's Baskin. Hmm. It is about a group of cops that get their shit into some deep shit, and shit goes down, and it's shitty. And it is a fucking nightmare, like, going 100 miles per hour. It is intense as shit. It's really fucking good. That's all I could say, because I don't want to spoil too much, but...
Cool.
It's fucking... Yeah, it hurts. It's a fucking rough movie. Next up was a remake of Rabid Dogs, which I was a little upset with. They didn't do anything new with the film, which was kind of upsetting, because if you watch Rabid Dogs, you know how it plays out. And it plays out like the original Rabid Dogs, which was a little upsetting. I was really hoping big things for that. It's got a great soundtrack, though. Looks slick and clean. But it's missing kind of the dirty and assholeness of the original. Next up was Gridlocked. Pass. Next up is...
I thought Gridlocked was awesome.
I was
amazing.
Joking. I was joking with that. I was trying to make it this year's John Wick. It is it's an experience. It's like every DTV action movie I've ever seen.
Nice, okay.
Next up was Ben Wheatley's High Rise, which is based off the novel. It is completely different from the book. It is a nightmare in Ben Wheatley's head, it seems. It is about a group of wealthy people in a high rise, and shit goes down. If you read the book, you kind of know how it plays out. It plays out the same, but it's almost told as like a nightmare.
Okay.
Not a horror film by any means, but just a very oddball movie, but it works. It works really well.
Cool.
Next up was Snyderverse is Back, which I thought would be more entertaining. It's by the director Borgman, which I really enjoyed. Borgman. It's pretty much two assassins that are pitted against one another who battle out in a swamp. But it's not as exciting as it seems or sounds. Next up was Office, which everybody disliked at Fantastic Fest, and I fucking loved it.
Oh, really?
It is a Korean slasher. It's set in an office building. This one worker goes crazy one night and disappears, and they can't find out where he is, but people keep on disappearing in the office. And it is, I feel it's a huge homage to old slasher films. There's so many, like, little homages, like, from, you know, House by the Cemetery to The Dorm That Drew Blood. Just so many different things to this movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Most people found it a bore. I thought it was great. So I just, on the minority on that one, which I was surprised. Another film that's, I think this is like my number three of Fantastic Fest, which is called February. Have you heard about this one? Are you there, Sean?
I have not.
It is directed by Oz Perkins, who is Anthony Perkins' son.
Daddy.
It is... It's kind of hard to talk about the movie because you don't want to give too much away. It's about two girls that are holding back from like kind of a Christmas release at their school. They're waiting on their parents to pick them up, and some devilish shit is going down behind the scenes. That's all I can pretty much tell. I know it's getting a release next year, I think in February, by Lionsgate, who's A24, which is Lionsgate. But yeah, it contains one of the most haunting moments in cinema history for me. It fucking gets... I had chills. And it's in the screener library for, you know, because they send us certain movies before Fantastic Fest so we could watch them. So we're not overwhelmed. And I just keep watching that, like, that 10 seconds over and over and over and over again. I fucking love it. Next up was, by the team that brought VHS, they did a new horror anthology called Southbound. Roxanne Benjamin, David Bruckner, and Radio Silence got together and made kind of an interweaving horror anthology that makes sense and has a roundabout, which was refreshing.
Kind of like how Trick or Treat.
Not as good as Trick or Treat.
Well,
but
I mean, how they pieced it together, the structure of it.
It's well structured. Feels like one movie. Has some pretty intense sequences and scenes. Definitely up there on the horror anthology list. Not a lot of good horror anthologies these days. This one definitely succeeded at certain things.
Cool.
Next up was Men and Chicken.
What's that?
Men and Chicken.
Men and Chicken.
Yeah, that Mars Mads Mikkelsen dude, whoever's in Hannibal.
Mads Mikkelsen?
Yeah, that guy. It's a comedy. And I thought it was hilarious for 30 minutes, and it took a nosedive, and I wanted it to be over really, really bad.
Wow.
I was not a fan of the last hour of that movie. It's really funny up until then. It's like a drugged-out Coen Brothers movie, if that tells you anything. Next up was The Club, which is very disturbing. It is about a house that houses priests that have molested young children.
Oh, dear God.
And they all live together. And some shit goes down, and fucked up shit happens.
Nice.
I didn't like it. Man vs. Snake, which is kind of the unofficial sequel to King of Kong, which is about a guy who has the high score in Nibbler. And the hit line of the movie is, "What the fuck is Nippler?" But you'll find out when you watch this movie. Next up was The Mind's Eye, who is the director of Almost Human. The Mind's Eye is like a fucking fucked up George Jetson 90s Scanners movie. If Scanners 4 existed, that would be The Mind's Eye. Wow. I was not too happy with it. I was a little let down.
Because Almost Human is pretty solid.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It was just, I was expecting more. Sensoria, skip. we already talked about Bone Tomahawk. It is fucking insane. It is a Western with cannibals and Kurt Russell, Matthew Fox, Richard Jenkins, David Arquette, Sid Haig. It is a fucking outstanding cast and a really fucking fun movie. That's going to be out soon.
I'm told don't watch the trailer because it could be spoilery.
I didn't watch it, but it is, it's a big character movie, a lot of characters.
Maybe you spoiled it with talking cannibals.
Patrick, that's in the synopsis, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's not a big surprise. I mean, you find out that whenever the movie debuted and they mentioned, they said, fucking old West movie where they fight cannibals.
Okay.
It's pretty much there. I mean,
I'm still going to avoid the trailer. I'm going to go in as cold as possible.
And Patrick Wilson too. I forgot to mention him.
Sweet.
I'll tell you a reason. There's a reason why it's called Bone Tomahawk.
Mm.
Holy fuck! But it is intense as fuck. It is so fucking good. Great Western. It's by the guy who wrote Asylum Blackout. I found out after I watched the movie. I was freaking out because I was like, holy shit. I love Asylum Blackout. I talk about that movie all the time.
Kurt Russell's in two Westerns this year.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He does a fucking great job in this. Everybody does a great job. It is a hell of a story, and, oh, man, it is fucking best kill ever. It wins best kill ever.
Nice.
And last but not least, a movie that will go down. I hope this movie makes a huge impact when it's released, but it's called Too Late. It stars John Hawks, who is one of the better actors in the world.
Oh, yeah.
This movie is another thing that is filmed on 35mm, who has five takes, five different reels, 22 minutes apiece. And it is a story about a man on a journey to find a woman.
Hmm.
And this movie is fucking gut-wrenching. I cried fucking twice in this movie.
Really?
And I never cry in movies. Last movie I cried in was Blue Ruin.
Hmm.
And this movie had me, I not cry twice, tear up a lot one time.
Right.
And this is spoiler-free. John Hawks sings, which I already melt when John Hawks sings because I rewatched that scene of Martha Macy May Marlene.
Oh, man, so good.
Because he's just a beautiful actor. Like,
yeah.
He's so good at everything he does, and he nails it in this movie. But it's one of those movies that we'll have to talk about further because you can't give too much away.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting because you could take those five reels and you can mix them up any way you wanted to, and you'd still have the same movie.
Hmm. Interesting.
Like, it's a very... And it projected on 35 at Fantastic Fest, which was great. But people are comparing it to Tarantino. I wouldn't say that. I just think it's a filmmaker's choice, dialogue-wise and storytelling-wise. But it is a fucking great movie. Nice. Like, I hope it lands hard when it comes out. Because it should, because it's fucking incredible. But that's fantastic. That's the movies I saw.
Damn, holy shit, man. You watch so many movies.
There's like another 70 movies that played.
Yeah,
so.
That's crazy. Cool. BJ and I were talking last episode, and you and I have been talking, and I'm thinking, I don't want to, promise, because you never know how things are going to turn out, but we're going to definitely try to make it this next year and try to do some sort of live podcast. So
I'll believe it when I see it.
Exactly. Sure. Yep. I know. So anyway, I really want to go, and we'll see what happens with that. So I thank all you guys for listening. We got to take off. Give our sponsors some love. Coffee Shop of Horrors, GrindhouseVideo.com. Buy Wolfman of Mars music and buy Kevin Spencer's art. You can go to thescreamcast.com/sponsors. All the info is there. We even got some codes for you to save a little bit of money for Coffee Shop of Horrors and Grindhouse Video. And with that, we should all the gang also, should be back together next week. Go ahead, Brad.
Hopefully. I was going to say, for those that listen to all the Fantastic Fest stuff, definitely visit the website.
Yes.
Because there's like 100 things that I did not mention. Like events and book signings, and Nicholas Rempin was there. Like, a lot of shit happened.
Sweet.
So.
FantasticFest.com. All right. We will talk to all of you guys next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
This part in, I'll just talk. I'm drinking IBC root beer, which is probably not the best to get a cold, but everything else hurts to drink. The carbonation actually helps your sore throat, it seems. Well, for me anyway. But yeah.
All right, I'm back.
Oh,
sorry.
I was carrying a conversation with
myself. Oh, Maria?
Yep.